Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to As It Is. I'm June Sims in Washington. Detroit, Michigan is often called the Motor City. The name came from all the new vehicles being produced in its factories. But today, Detroit is better known for its now empty factories than its cars. On our program, we report on the changes in the city and how those changes have given rise to a new kind of business, light tourism. We also tell about an effort to help city planners clean up Detroit. Detroit's Easttown Theater was once a successful business. Its big name performers included rock stars such as Bob Seger, Ted Nugent, and Alice Cooper. Today, the sidewalk in front of the theater serves as a bed for homeless people. Inside the building, the floor where musicians once performed is filled with holes. Some critics say the theater looks like a place where a bomb exploded. But it is actually an example of Detroit's blight. Hard economic times caused the breakdown of the Easttown Theater and other buildings. St. Agnes Catholic Church is also in need of repair. The once beautiful church has graffiti covering its walls and many broken windows. Columns that support the structure are starting to collapse. Inside a school next to the church, a visitor can find forgotten shoes, old books, and other unwanted things. Kevin Orr is Detroit's emergency manager. He estimates the city has 78,000 buildings that suffer from blight. He says these buildings can become targets of vandal attacks and fire. Jesse Welter is a photographer. He uses his pictures to tell a story. He sees art in the blight.
I can see the beauty in it and the architecture. I think they kind of tell you the history, you know, the past of what, you know, what it is, what it's become.
In 2011, Jesse Welter began inviting other photographers on his drives through the city.
Basically, I was kind of doing this on my own, and I thought, you know, why not take people with me and give people an opportunity to do what I do.
Now, people pay him between $40 and $100 to show them Detroit neighborhoods.
My van, I can take up to 10 people, and they're usually full. Been doing this since 2011, and I've been to probably over 180 different buildings, and the tours I've probably done probably about 300 tours.
One of the largest buildings they visit is the former Packard Automobile Factory. It is one of the most popular stops on the tour. The former factory has a new owner who is interested in improving the building. One day, the Packard Automobile plant might become someone's home.
Detroit City is the place to be. This mad dog town gonna set you free.
In the second half of our show, we look at how Detroit plans to repair and replace blighted buildings around the city. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm June Sims. The blighted neighborhoods in Detroit have changed the way people look at the city. But a new group of city planners aim to repair or replace the damaged buildings. Steve Ember reports.
Tia Ciara Bonner is one of three people working on what is called the Motor City Mapping Project. It seeks to map all the troubled properties in Detroit. Ms. Bonner uses an electronic tablet to keep a record of the condition of each property she examines.
As a Detroiter, I want to feel safe, and I need these abandoned homes knocked down.
She is not happy with what she sees.
I have saw more burnt up homes and more empty lots than the houses that's standing.
The information that she and her team gather is stored on computers at Motor City Mapping Headquarters. There, other people examine the information, a process they call blexting. It combines the words blight and texting. Jerry Paffendorf is chief executive officer of Loveland Technologies. His company designed the blexting software programs.
As properties are surveyed, they're stored in a database and immediately visualized on a map. And everything comes in real time, kind of like Twitter.
Glenda Price is co-chair of the Detroit Blight Removal Task Force. Her group is supervising the Motor City Mapping Project. She says the group is bringing local, state, and federal agencies together to help solve the city's blight. The goal is to improve the physical appearance of Detroit.
One of the biggest obstacles to achieving that goal is going to be money, because it's going to be costly to do this. And so that's why we recognize that it will take probably 3 years is what we are projecting.
Jerry Paffendorf says the software program currently has a list of about 180,000 properties. The cost to clean up each blighted property is between $5,000 and $10,000. The Motor City Mapping Project is expected to complete its work this month. The Detroit Blight Removal Task Force will have a better idea of the final cost of the cleanup once the project ends. I'm Steve Ember.
It's right in the USA. You hear of it every day. A city much renowned, they call it the Motor Town. And there's a story to be told about a city gone cold.
And that's our program for today. It was based on reports from VOA's Kane Farabaugh in Detroit. The show was written by Jonathan Evans. Thank you for spending time with us today. Every day on As It Is, we report on issues we believe are of interest to you. You can tell us what you want to hear on a future show. Email us at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm June Sims. Join us again tomorrow at this time for another As It Is from the Voice of America.
We'll call it the Detroit Blues. It's Big City USA. And town's not so far away. Thank you.
inside unless we stand up and fight.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. Things may be changing soon for some crops in Africa. A group called the African Orphan Crops Consortium says these plants are not getting enough attention, and it thinks they could help ease hunger and improve nutrition on the continent. The consortium opened the African Plant Breeding Academy last year in Nairobi, Kenya. The academy is the result of cooperation among international organizations. They are hoping to use genetic information from 100 African plants and trees that researchers have largely ignored. But food scientists say these crops have lots of possibilities. Howard Yana Shapiro is a senior fellow at the University of California, Davis. He is also the chief agricultural officer and global director of plant science and external research for Mars Incorporated, the candy company. Mr. Shapiro says he began thinking about ways to improve nutrition at the local level after seeing how poor nutrition affects children in Africa and India. He says a woman who does not eat right during her pregnancy can affect the physical and mental health of a baby. These problems, he says, cannot be corrected. Mr. Shapiro spoke to VOA from Nairobi. He said the African Plant Breeding Academy will work on many different kinds of plants.
Some of them are tree leaves like baobab. Some of them are funny plants called African nightshade. Some fit into a family called cocoa yams. Some have names that are completely unfamiliar to anyone in the Western world, but are the basis of daily food for a family in rural Africa.
He says hundreds of African plants have been ignored because they are not economically important in international trade. But food scientists say the plants still have value to people in Africa. The African Orphan Crops Consortium plans to train plant breeders and researchers over a one-year period about the genetics of these crops. The consortium hopes they will produce more food with higher nutritional levels.
They're being trained as I speak. I just came from the classroom, and they're learning how to use these tools that this advanced laboratory will help them at their home institutions move forward breeding on these crops, which are so critical.
Mr. Shapiro says anything researchers learn will be shared with the world without cost.
I wanted to make the information, put it in the public domain, to speed breeding going forward to improve the nutritive quality of these plants.
And that's the Agriculture Report from VOA Learning English. For more agriculture stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com, where you can also find transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our reports. I'm Christopher Cruz. From VOA Learning English, this is Science in the News. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Faith Lapidus. Today on the program, we have three stories
from the African nation of Cameroon. We report on efforts by the government to close illegal hospitals. We also tell about the country's ban on non-biodegradable plastic bags. And we report on some of the problems faced by Cameroonians as their country moves to digital technology.
Cameroon has launched a campaign against illegal hospitals and medical centers, including those that use traditional Chinese medicines. The Ministry of Health has blamed hospitals operating without official permission for causing deaths of patients. 27-year-old Mirabel Ndi watches helplessly as her 2-month-old baby cries in pain. She and her baby have been at a private medical clinic in the city of Yaoundé all night long. But she says there are no medical workers on duty.
I came to the hospital and there's nobody to help.
Since the government began closing what it considers illegal hospitals, some health workers have gone into hiding. Bijoko Atangana is the Secretary General of the country's National Medical Council. He says the government will continue to take action against what it believes are illegal clinics.
Si vous faites le tour, vous allez voir la production.
He says a person only needs to go and see for themselves the growing number of hospitals across the country, many of them operating illegally. He says all doctors working in such places and who do not belong to the council are practicing illegally.
Andre Mama Fuda is Cameroon's Minister of Health. He says the government has identified 600 illegal hospitals and health centers.
La campagne d'aujourd'hui vise tout ce que nous avons.
He says the government is targeting hospitals all over the country. He says the government wants to know if they are operating legally and will close them if they lack permission to operate. Even some of the hospitals that are operating legally have problems and may not be able to react effectively to emergencies. Dr. Etunde Albert works at the Central Hospital in Yaoundé. He says the few workers at the hospital have too many people to care for. He says the hospital can deal with up to 8 emergencies at any one time. It can also handle 20 non-emergency cases at once. But he says it is very important that trained workers be available to treat Cameroonians, so that when there is an emergency, the hospital will have the people and medical equipment to react quickly.
Dr. Nick Nangwam heads the St. Louis Higher Institute of Health, which trains medical workers. He says the steps being taken to stop hospitals from operating illegally will save many lives. He says when it comes to medicine, there is no room for mistakes, and so the action is welcome. You go to the hospital, there is the doctor who is genuine, then there is a nurse who is called doctor, the laboratory technician doctor, then the nurse aid doctor, and so doctor, which used to mean something, he says, has become a generic name for somebody in a white coat. The government is also taking steps against healthcare workers who give traditional Chinese medicine to patients. But some Cameroonians, like Daniel Kum, believe the government should organize the practice of Chinese medicine, not ban it. He says, after moving from one hospital to the other, I did not have drugs that could help me. But when I took the Chinese medication, especially what they call the one bao, it helped me and I was happy.
Cameroonians are returning to traditional ways of transporting food because of a ban on the production, sale, and use of non-biodegradable plastic bags. People are now using large leaves from plantain trees to store food. But not everyone is happy about that. It is early morning in Mfu, a town near Yaoundé. Ngapamela has come to a farm to buy plantain leaves. She has been doing this since the government's decision to ban plastic bags. Ngapamela says many people want to buy plantain leaves, but she says they are difficult to find in many neighborhoods.
At times, the farmers will refuse to sell. There are times that they will increase their prices, so it makes it difficult for us to bring leaves to Yaoundé to sell.
At the Mfundi market in Yaoundé, people who sell food are now also selling leaves. Etta Deborah owns a restaurant. She says she uses the leaves for some traditional meals like corn fufu, koki, achu, and menduba.
It's natural, and then it's our African culture to use a leaf for keeping of food. And I want to protect my customers.
But not everyone is happy. Cameroonian Ben Collins says he is worried about possible health risks.
You don't know the origin of the leaves. You don't know how the leaves were transported. You don't know how they were conserved. You don't know the content of the chemical reactions between the leaf and the food. Some leaves sometimes are used for medicinal purposes, and some people unknowingly take these leaves and they package their food with not knowing the effect.
Dr. Agata Thanya is a nutritionist and lecturer at the University of Yaoundé. She says there is nothing to be worried about if plantain leaves are used in the right way.
We can use leaves, natural leaves, which we have in abundance, and wrap our food in it. And besides, these leaves have a very, very nice flavor.
Others working at the market say leaves are not supposed to carry many things. Nivelle Ngalim sells bread in Yaoundé.
Where do they want us to put the bread and the cake? Will it be normal to put it in leaves? For me, it is not normal, the banning of the plastic.
The Cameroonian Association for the Defense of the Rights of Consumers says the government's decision was a mistake. Yvonne Tarkang works for the group.
Unfortunately, the socioeconomic aspect wasn't taken into consideration, which means that if incentive measures are not put in place, so many people within the sector would be affected. So we think that the government should come up with alternatives because non-biodegradable plastic bags are banned in Cameroon.
Cameroon decided to ban non-biodegradable plastic bags because they pollute waterways. They also can be seen lying on the ground in many areas. Plastic bags are brought to landfills where they slowly break down. The resulting plastic particles then pollute the soil and water. The government plans to work with private businesses to make packaging materials that are less harmful to the environment. Cameroonians have until April to use up all of the plastic bags already in use. After that, people using the bags could face heavy fines or even time in jail.
Countries around the world are preparing to end their dependence on analog technology. The move to digital technology is set to take place by the middle of next year. There are many good reasons for going digital. Digital images are sharper and brighter than analog ones, and the sound is clearer. But many people in Cameroon are not ready for the changes. So the country has set up a national commission to assist with the move to digital technology. The group says many people have old televisions that will not be able to receive digital signals. Thibaut Mathias is a digital switchover expert.
The population is supposed to be informed. They are supposed to be well educated, because you will not imagine an old person maybe in a village somewhere with his old radio set. One morning he is unable to tune to his station because the switchover has taken place. He was not aware.
The cost of soon-to-be out-of-date televisions has been falling. Some experts fear manufacturers will send these TVs to Cameroon and sell them to people who do not know about the digital switch. So the government has banned the import of non-digital television sets. But that decision has angered many people like Germain Nfor, a secondary school teacher in Yaoundé.
Government have not really sensitized the public on why they are banning the old type of TV. And after everything, the plasma TVs are very, very expensive. I wish to ask if there are not other alternatives that one can use to capture images apart from the plasma TV.
Guillaume Kimby is a reporter. He says many Cameroonians do not have the money to buy a digital television.
We are simply being taken by surprise, and the new TV screens are not within the reach of the average Cameroonians, which therefore means that so many Cameroonians would no longer be able to watch TV if that switchover were to come around now.
Importers of electronic goods are also worried. Panjay Raoul is one of them. We are calling on the state to look for ways of supplying appliances that can transform the images from analog to digital, he says. Are we able to buy flat screens? Today, the minimum wage in Cameroon is 23,000 CFA francs. So I do not know if a Cameroonian will be able to feed himself with such an amount and also buy a plasma screen. We are asking the state to reconsider its decision, he says.
Digital TV receivers cost as much as $1,000 in Cameroon, but the average salary there is about $56 a month. Experts like Thibaut Mathias say people must start saving money to buy the digital sets. He says the decision made by the International Telecommunications Union to go digital next year will not be delayed.
ITU has already decided that after that date, those countries that will refuse to switch will not be able to receive signals from abroad, or their own signals will not be able to be transmitted to neighboring countries because of interference.
Many experts agree that African countries must move toward digital technology. But they say people need to be guided through the process. They say there should be special telephone lines and major advertising campaigns to help people make the switch to digital.
This Science in the News was written by Christopher Cruz. Our producer was June Sims. I'm Faith Lapidus.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Join us again next week for more news about science on The Voice of America.